Birth for your baby. When we think and talk about labour, we almost always focus on the woman being in labour and forget that babies experience labour too. As you know, their head can change shape to adapt their position, and they are very much doing their bit to come into the world as easily as possible. None of us remember being born. It is hard to know how babies feel. There are several theories about the impact of birth on babies and their feelings after birth, but the fact is, no one really knows for sure. What we do know is that babies are conscious, aware, and are very much experiencing labour too. Here, we will run through birth through the eyes of a newborn, so that you can understand how to help to create the best possible environment for your baby to be born into. A spa day. Imagine you've been given a free spa day and you're chilling in the jacuzzi where it's lovely and warm. The sounds you can hear are consistent and the volume is generally the same level. People are coming in and out, but no one is bothering you because you're in your own little bubble and the noise of the jacuzzi is making voices more muffled. The lighting is dim. You've got food and drink whenever you want it, and you don't really need anything else. It's a predictable environment, and you're pretty settled. After a while, you know it's time for you to leave. To leave the jacuzzi, you need to go through a tight tunnel, and you don't know where the tunnel is going to lead to. Suddenly, the water around you drains, and a strong force is pushing you into the tunnel and out of the jacuzzi. You do your best to go along with it, but you still have no idea where you're going to come out. The force gets stronger and stronger. Everything's getting a bit squashed, and you become very aware of each part of your body as the tunnel gets smaller and smaller. You have to twist and turn your body to fit through. You're okay, but your head is beginning to get squashed. At one point, you wonder if you are stuck, but then the tunnel clears, giving you a bit more room. This extra room means you can wriggle around to get through. The sensation of being squeezed and pushed gets pretty intense. You're wondering, is this definitely the right way to the exit? Where am I going to come out? Your friends are waiting outside to meet you, and they've been waiting for a while, so they're really excited. They have lots of towels to dry you with, a new camera with a bright flash, your favourite food ready, and they are very excited about seeing you. You go through one final squeeze, and whoa, you're out. There's so much space, it's scary. Your arms fly wide open. You had no idea your arms could open that wide. Someone grabs you, rubs you with a towel, puts a hat on you. Everything is so loud and it seems so bright. The high-pitched noises, the cooler temperature, the brightness, it's all a bit much and your body needs to adjust to all of these changes. As your eyes are starting to adjust, a very bright flash goes off in your face and disorientates you. All the sensory stimulation is overwhelming. Then lastly, someone shoves food in your mouth. How would you feel? A baby is born into an entirely new universe. They have never seen light, heard clear sounds, been touched, and most importantly, been independent from you. It is difficult to explain how sensitive a newborn baby is. The jacuzzi and tunnel are the nearest I could come up with, and just one way of explaining how overwhelming a massive change of environment can be. There's a lot more that a baby experiences at birth. They now have some responsibility for themselves too, even if they're not conscious of it. Their bodies start to do things immediately that they have never done before. Their circulation switches over, so oxygenated blood starts to run through arteries, and deoxygenated blood now runs through the veins. They need to breathe, regulate their own body temperature, and feed. Life as they knew it has completely changed. Going from floating around and being kept warm and fed through your belly button to being pushed and squeezed out into the world must be a strange experience. However, it's really important to know that being squeezed is not a bad thing, so please don't think that you want to prevent this for your baby. The squeezing helps to loosen and release the mucus and fluid in their lungs and airways, so they can breathe easier. Not only that, your body has prepared vaginal flora, bacteria, for your baby to kickstart their immune system. This particular flora is symbiotic with your breast milk, meaning that your baby's gut will have the perfect bacteria to digest your milk. Your body is so in sync with your baby. How to help your baby adjust to their new world. Dim lighting and quiet voices are good for you in labour, as we have covered, and they are also good for a baby coming into the world too. To help your baby feel safe and calm, your baby needs to be kept as close as possible to life as they knew it. The main sources of comfort outside the womb are your smell, touch, sound, and your voice. Newborns will recognise and trust their mum's smell, touch, and voice. Smell. In all mammals, including humans, smell is the oldest of the five senses and plays a huge role in many behaviours that are essential for survival and reproduction. All mammals react to odours, and your newborn baby is no different. A newborn baby's incredible sense of smell will never be as good in adult life. Unwashed newborns use their sense of smell as a comfort measure by bringing their hands to their nose and mouth for that familiar smell. Research shows that babies will choose their mum's milk over anyone else's almost every time. In one study, when two different types of milk were placed either side of a baby's head, they kept turning to the side that smells like their mum. Skin-to-skin contact is so important after birth for sense of smell. If your baby needs to go to special care or is born prematurely, skin-to-skin contact is usually possible at some point. If it is not immediately possible, don't worry, as it is still just as important even if this is a few days later. What you can do in this situation is to put something with your smell in their cot or incubator. The neonatal staff will be able to help guide you on what's safest. This simple thing brings back some familiarity for them. I recently watched an online clip where a dad puts a mum's t-shirt next to their newborn baby, and within seconds he stops crying. That is how powerful and important you and your body are to your baby. The importance of touch. As well as being a comfort, touch is crucial for newborns. Touch through skin-to-skin contact, massaging, or stroking is known to improve weight gain, reduce stress, stabilise the respiratory system, prevent low blood sugar, and reduce crying. Research shows that when premature babies are massaged daily, they gain weight faster and perform better in recognition tests. You know when you're feeling a bit vulnerable or down and someone close to you gives you a hug? It's like they've taken some of your burden away and you get a sense of relief. Babies get that too. In fact, for most of us, touch remains an important factor in our lives. Skin-to-skin contact after birth is so important, and your midwife will help you bring your baby to your chest as soon after birth as possible. This is simply where you have your naked baby placed on your chest, touching just your skin. It does what it says on the tin, skin to skin. Leaving them in skin to skin for at least 1 hour after birth really helps to gently introduce them into their new world. Without any skin to skin contact, it can be hard for a newborn to feel safe on their own. Not only that, they are kept nice and warm babies feed better. Keeping them warm also helps to stabilise blood sugars, because they do not need to spend precious energy on regulating their own temperature. You're helping them to do that, so they remain an extension of your body. If you are unable to have skin-to-skin for whatever reason, get your birth partner to do it instead. Your baby will still get many of the benefits, feeling soothed and comforted, and it is a great bonding experience for them too. If you leave your baby in skin-to-skin contact on your chest, your baby will naturally start to head towards food when they are ready. There are some fascinating videos of this happening on YouTube. One, in particular, called Breast Crawl, has over 1 million views. So after trying for a while, apparently it was almost 45 minutes in total, at 7 minutes, 30 seconds, the baby latches himself onto the breast, with no guidance. This isn't always possible, but it goes to show how instinctive newborn behaviour is. Sometimes we can get a bit impatient about breastfeeding and want a baby to feed right away after birth. But if we go back to how you felt when you had just come out of the jacuzzi on your spa day, all of the surrounding distractions meant that you were not initially interested in food. Rather than have food put in your mouth, you would probably want it left in reach, ready for when you had adjusted and felt hungry. That is what staying in skin to skin gives your baby the opportunity to do. Get the food when they feel ready. They may start to show you that they are ready to eat by turning their head, licking their lips, and sucking their hands. If you want to encourage them and bring them onto the breast, that's up to you. The important part is waiting for them to be ready, if you can. Familiar sounds. The sound of your heartbeat and voice are the most familiar sounds your newborn knows. Having your baby in skin to skin on your chest brings them closer to your heart and voice, and therefore the familiar comfort of the womb. You don't have to do anything, just hearing you talk is enough. Your partner's voice and those that you have spent a lot of time with after 24 weeks in pregnancy will also be familiar to your baby. If you can't have skin-to-skin at birth, your birth partner should be able to do this instead, and their voice will be comforting too. Key points. Your baby is also experiencing labour. Your body and baby are so in sync. Your baby does not yet understand their new world, and outside stimuli can be overwhelming. Newborns need your body in order to feel safe. The first main sources of comfort outside the womb are your smell, touch, and sound. When a baby is born, so is a mother. This section is one of the shortest of the book, but it has an important message. Healthcare professionals rarely tell women about the birth pause, and rarely do mums know or talk about it amongst themselves. Some mums even tell me that they are embarrassed or feel guilty about how they felt in the first few moments after birth, when there's no need to be. So let's talk about it now. The raw emotion that pours out in this life-changing moment is incredible and can be overwhelming. The moment you meet the one you have been nurturing and carrying for months, whilst flooded with hormones, determination, and vast physiological changes, cannot be put into words. You will only ever experience birth a select number of times, which is why you need to know about the birth pause. In a world where everything moves so quickly, we need to make a specific effort to pause and absorb what has just happened. You did it. Whatever way you gave birth, you did it. You're a mother. Most women become still during the moments just after their baby's arrival, no matter what type of birth they had. There's a birth pause, where the world seems to stop, when those first few moments are surreal. Some new mums have told me that they feel guilty because they didn't want to hold their baby right away. I've seen women almost guard themselves and lean back when I have gone to pass them their baby immediately. Over the years, I have come to appreciate that it is completely normal not to hold your baby instantly. Just like in lots of other milestones that life has to offer, there is no one way to go into motherhood. I once cared for a woman having a water birth. She was incredible. She was so calm and focused throughout her labour. When the baby was born, she just looked down, staring at her baby under the water. I slowly helped bring her baby to the surface and let her just look and have a moment to come back into herself and be present. Nothing was needed from her in that moment. Her mind and body had worked hard to get here, and she took a pause. Me, Dad, and Mum all looked at the baby with his little face sitting out of the water and cords still pulsating, delivering oxygen-rich blood to him. After about 20 seconds, he screwed up his nose, opened his eyes, and looked around before filling his lungs with air and taking his first breath. This all took less than a minute, and I just had my hands gently supporting him to stay above the water until Mum felt ready to bring him up to her chest in skin to skin. If she had given birth on the bed, floor, or pretty much anywhere else, I would not have touched her baby. I would have supported her to sit back and look at her baby in peace. It was only because the baby was underwater that I helped him come to the surface to breathe and take that all-important breath. Afterwards, she said that she would never forget that moment as she watched her son take his first breath so calmly. Like many women, this mum really needed a moment to herself to appreciate what had happened to her and her body. She needed to pause and just look at her baby first. Her first birth was very different because she didn't realise that the birth pause existed. She explained that before she knew it, her baby was on her chest and her arms felt weird and wobbly, so having to hold the baby wasn't the pleasurable experience she had expected. Her gut instinct made her want to get the baby off her. She said that it was too overwhelming and told me that she felt bad for feeling like that for months afterwards and didn't understand why. But this was just a reaction, not a conscious thought or action. Water births. Babies that are born in water can take a little longer to take their first breath and may seem particularly calm or unfazed by the whole thing. Water is a gentle way of bringing them into the world. They have gone from water to water. It is still nice and warm and usually the lights are dim. Your midwife may wait for your baby to cry, but then may ask to stimulate your baby if they need a little reminder that they have been born and need to start breathing. Don't worry if this happens. Your midwife knows what to do and when to intervene, if at all. It's quite common for mums to be a little stunned, physically drained, or relieved at first. Something changes permanently, and it is a powerful moment. Almost always, the first tears I see are from the partner or birth partner. You have gone from a place of hard work and focus to suddenly stopping, relaxing your muscles, and then seeing your baby for the first time. If you have been in the zone, your mammalian brain is still very active, and it takes a moment to come back into the human thinking or neocortical way of thinking. Unless there has been a problem in labour or a concern over the well-being of your baby, there's no rush. Relish in the moment and enjoy the pause. Overall, women have more peaceful, memorable, and better birth experiences if we move away from having expectations about those first few moments. You might cry at first, or you might not. It is a time to be in this fleeting moment. It is a chance to take in the details, their tiny toes, fingers, and face. If your baby is directly on your chest, sometimes you can't see them properly. A short pause before skin-to-skin contact won't make any difference to a healthy baby, and unless the baby needs a little more support from your midwife, we all have time to pause. Unless told otherwise, midwives often assume women want us to pass them their baby right away, and some women do want this. Put your preference in your birth plan so your midwife knows what you want and feels comfortable to stand back. No matter what kind of birth you have, if it feels right, pause and breathe. If you want to pick your baby up right away and you don't feel the need for a pause, then great. Just don't expect anything at all from yourself right away. Key points. The first few moments following birth are precious. You might not want to hold your baby right away. You may need to pause. No one should rush you unless there is a true emergency. You're the boss. Write about the pause in your birth plan so your midwife knows to hold off if this is what you want. You're going to be a great mum. Real birth stories. Amy's story. I was 41 weeks exactly and had a midwife appointment in the morning and took up the offer of a sweep. I went for it as I was so ready to meet our baby girl. I met the other antenatal girls afterwards who were also patiently waiting for babies to decide to arrive. We felt hot and fed up. Walking back, I wondered if I was getting contractions. I had lots of Braxton Hicks the whole week, so assumed not. By the time I was home at 2 p.m, I was definitely having contractions. I gave it some time to make sure it wasn't a false alarm and called my husband to tell him it was happening. I took paracetamol and kept busy. As they got stronger, I put my TENS machine on and went up on the levels as they progressed, tried to keep occupied watching Netflix. I liked the premise and ideas of hypnobirthing, so tried as much of the breathing techniques as I could and managed well as the contractions got to 2 to 3 minutes apart and pretty intense. By 10 p.m, I was ready to go to hospital. I was seen around 11 p.m. and was almost 4 centimetres. I was offered pain relief and suggested to go home. My body was telling me no, I didn't want to leave. I didn't fancy the suggestion to have a walk around the car park, so asked for some pethidine and got a bit of rest while it worked its magic. James tried to get some rest too, but was a bit wired with everything going on. At around 1 a.m, the contractions kicked up a notch, and I woke up. I was 5 centimetres and was walked very slowly up to a labour room. I had some bleeding, so to keep an eye, we went there with potential for a midwife-led pool room later on. I liked the idea of bobbing around in a birthing pool. I got on the gas and air and was convinced it wasn't plugged in. The contractions felt like they were stacking up on each other. My TENS was constantly on boost. I was in the zone. In a good position, leaning on the bed, keeping my hips moving. James was great. When he heard my breathing getting erratic, he would remind me to slow down. The belt wasn't getting a good trace of baby's heartbeat as I was moving a lot. The midwife suggested using a clip on her head to get a more reliable reading. There was fun and games getting on the bed for this. Every time I lifted my leg, a contraction started and I couldn't get up. Finally, just before 2:30 a.m, I was heaved onto the bed. The clip was attached and, lo and behold, I was 10 centimetres dilated. "So can I push?" I asked. "If you feel like it." The midwife popped to go get supplies for the usual long first-time mum pushing stage. At 2:32, I felt the urge and went with it after holding back previously. It was totally instinctive. I moved onto my right side. James looked down and saw the head appear. Luckily, just as he thought he might have to deliver his own daughter, the midwife was back. There was no stopping me. Push 2, her head was out. Push 3, and our daughter was born. 2:39 a.m, the 8th of June, 2018. 12.5 hours, start to finish. I surrendered to the labour. It was tough, but quick. I went with it. I felt like I was in a haze, but the moment she was handed to me, everything cleared. Our gorgeous, healthy Ella was here. Laura's story, first-time mum. At 27, I was lucky enough to become pregnant for the first time. As a registered nurse and a practicing health visitor, it was the opinion of many that pregnancy, labour, and the care of a newborn baby would be a breeze for me, as I knew what I was doing. My pregnancy was pretty much uncomplicated until around 32 weeks pregnant, when my blood results were abnormal, and I began the weekly journey to hospital for blood tests and monitoring of baby due to possible cholestasis, a condition where bile cannot flow from the liver to the duodenum. I saw two consultants, one who was happy to keep an eye on me and one who suggested an induction at 37 weeks. In the end, I was brought in for induction of labour at 37 plus 5, which lasted for 4 long days, ending in an emergency caesarean. Our beautiful baby girl, Elise, was born weighing 7 pounds and 11 ounces at 2 minutes past midnight on the 11th of December 2016. Despite it being midnight, the team were great and they allowed us to remain in theatre for 45 minutes with skin to skin to initiate breastfeeding. I was really eager to try the breast crawl as a natural instinct, and mummies, it is an amazing natural instinct, so very clever. I was exhausted, but due to the hospital's protocol of early mobilisation, I was up 8 hours later walking to the bathroom. In hindsight, I realised this was necessary to prevent post-surgery complications. I desperately wanted to breastfeed, but was so very tired. Thankfully, an amazing midwife helped me to hand express my colostrum and sat with me for over 2 hours, which I will forever be grateful for. On day two, we were discharged home. The following 4 months were very tough. I struggled to sleep between feeds due to flashbacks of a traumatic birth, and I wished the days and nights by. I smiled on the forefront and put on a brave face. Due to C-section recovery, breastfeeding was tough to establish. As sleep deprivation took its toll, I hit rock bottom. I felt I had lost all sense of who I was, and as though I was just going through the motions of each day. With encouragement from my family, I sought help from a GP who signposted me to the IAPT, Improving Access to Psychological Therapies team, and the health visitors, and prescribed me medication for PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, and postnatal depression. Depression in the postnatal period can happen to anybody. It does not stereotype. I wanted to share my experience to show that it does not matter who you are, what job you do, or which culture you come from, when you are given a newborn baby, you are a mother, and we are all together in the same boat. Those moments were hard, and I had to dig deep, but now feel lucky that the experience has made me who I am today, a strong woman and a mother who has an unbreakable bond with her now 2-year-old little girl. I went back to work over 18 months ago as a health visitor and was initially very nervous. However, I feel my experiences with PTSD and PND have given me a level of empathy I did not have before. And as such, I'm a huge advocate for promoting mental health services and talking about our feelings. My birth experience was far from ideal, but there are lots of services out there, midwives, health visitors, GP, perinatal mental health teams, IAPT, to name a few. I am eternally grateful for the professionals who supported me and am now able to say that 2 years on, the experience has not put me off trying for another baby in the future. And my partner of 9 years and I get married next year. Jordan, second time mum. I fell pregnant with baby number two when my firstborn was 13 months old. My first pregnancy ran so smoothly, and I had a lovely home water birth and naturally wanted the same with my second. At my booking appointment, my midwife was super supportive and encouraging of my decision to have a home birth. After the usual checks they do, I received a letter in the post to say I needed to see a consultant and have two extra growth scans due to having low PAPA, pregnancy-associated plasma protein A. I still don't really know what that is, but it's something about the placenta which can affect the baby's growth. There was mentions of risk of Down syndrome, stillbirth, and miscarriages, which shocked me completely and turned my positive pregnancy into one of anxiety. I went for my first growth scan at 30 weeks, and all was well. The consultant, however, insisted I had a hospital birth and kept saying no. She bartered down to a birth centre birth, but you are the same risk level as a home birth then, so what was the difference? My midwife kept reassuring me I would be okay for a home birth. The next growth scan at 35 weeks again showed that my baby was growing fine. I thought they would then discharge me back under the community team and I could continue down my positive home birth route. But this time I saw a different consultant who suggested an extra third growth scan and said due to my BMI being high, it's 1 point over to warrant me being overweight, that it wouldn't be safe for me to have a home birth. I felt at a loss. It was me versus them, and they're the experts in the field with the fancy letters after their names. I get it. They need to cover their backs if anything goes wrong, but surely the buck should stop with me. I went for my third growth scan at 38 weeks, and the measurements looked great, so I was feeling so positive that I would finally be discharged. But once again, they said no. This time, the consultant reeled off a load of worrying statistics in relation to my BMI, that I'd be X times more likely to need an instrumental birth or a C-section, and that I was even too high risk for the birth centre. He even told me he wanted me to be induced ASAP. It angered me so much, I cried angry tears and kept asking why and to justify his reasons. He blamed the BMI and said he has to treat everyone whose BMI is high, whether they're 35 or 75, and that's a big difference. In short, I told him I'm having a home birth and walked out of the hospital feeling like I could conquer the world. I told myself I am going to have the birth I planned, even if I ended up in hospital. I wasn't going to give in or let their worry of getting a disciplinary get in the way of the most amazing experiences a woman can have. Less than 2 weeks later, I went into labour spontaneously at home. I was in my birth pool listening to some chilled music whilst my best friend, who is a student midwife, poured water over my back and my husband kept me hydrated. 3 hours later, out came my beautiful daughter. I just felt relief that nothing had gone wrong and that my stubbornness and intuition had paid off. I didn't do anything specifically to help me relax, like hypnobirthing or music, etc. It was really down to the reassurance of my midwife. It also helped that the same midwife, Emma, that I saw throughout my pregnancy, came to me in labour. I didn't have that experience first time around because I lived in a different area and they had a designed home birth team, whereas this time round, the community and home birth team are the same and covered the same area. During the labour, I did get into my zone, but I didn't prepare for that. I just did it. Hannah's story. We found out whilst I was away for the weekend that I was pregnant for the fifth time, after realising that I was super emotional and hormonal. I was so nervous after we had been trying for a couple of years. After my first baby, I had three miscarriages, one which was really horrid and ended in a blood transfusion. We wanted to wait until we had the 3 month okay before I started to believe it and tell anyone. Everything looked normal at 12 weeks, but it took a lot of hypnobirthing and meditation for me to get in the right headspace throughout pregnancy. We had extra scans the whole way through the pregnancy, which really made me feel reassured and that if anything was to look or feel suspicious, we would find out straight away. My pregnancy was fab the whole way through. It did seem tougher this time around, as I was a lot more tired. I also had SPD, which is quite painful. So I went for regular massages and did lots of exercises, which kept it at bay. I learned not to focus on my due date too much, but the pregnancy flew by and all of a sudden I was 10 days overdue. The midwife recommended I book in for an induction and sweep. I declined these as I believed in my body and I knew my baby would arrive when my baby was ready. I even went to my best friend's wedding 3 days before I gave birth. Hypnobirthing was incredible and I would recommend it to everyone. I kept a space mask on for most of the labour to block out the rest of the world. When I transferred from my house to the hospital, I even had a blanket over my head. I listened to a hypnobirthing app non-stop and totally got in a zen zone. The midwives didn't believe, when I arrived at the hospital, that I was anywhere near the end as I was so calm. I let them check me and I was 6 centimetres dilated, so they ran the pool and I got in. This was such a great relief. The pool was lovely. After about 2 hours, I told them I could feel the baby coming. I was so calm, I don't think they believed me. The baby was born in the water, so easily and calmly. The midwives were a little shocked because I was so calm. I managed to get my sister to film the birth on her phone for me, as after all the hypnobirthing practice, I really wanted to see it for myself. It was truly beautiful and makes me want to have more. Juno was born at 6:45 a.m. on the 10th of October 2019, in the most magical water birth I could ever have wished for. I was the first one in the world to touch her, and I brought my baby up from the water into the world, and hubby cut the cord. We had skin to skin straight away, and Juno latched on as soon as I tried to breastfeed. She has fed well ever since. Giving birth like this taught me so much about my mind and body. I gained a sense of understanding and strength I never knew I had. After all the pregnancies that didn't work out, I honestly felt something would go wrong my whole pregnancy. It was only when I really got into hypnobirthing and meditating that I started to relax and trust my body. If I could have that labour again, I would do it tomorrow. Heidi's story. On the 14th of September 2018, I discovered I was pregnant again, 8 months post C-section. My initial thoughts were excitement again, and then fear. Fear of how safe this pregnancy would be, and fear of another C-section, where I felt numb. I didn't want to feel any of that, so I looked into hypnobirthing, which came from a comment from a mum I met in my community who taught hypnobirthing and mentioned it to me. I replied with, "Ah, I had a C-section, so I don't think it would help me." How wrong was I? Hypnobirthing is for every birth and changed my outlook of the impending delivery. For me, it was the wording and affirmations teaching your brain to trust your body and the path of birth for that body and baby. To put in context, words like contractions became surges, and my language surrounding Peggy's birth was noticeably more positive. I was seen by my midwife, and never once was a repeat belly birth forced on me. It was so reassuring to feel I had a choice. I planned for a VBAC, vaginal birth after C-section, and felt supported and informed by the healthcare professionals looking after me. For myself, I consented to continuous fetal monitoring as it made me feel more relaxed during labour and it felt right for us. At 20 weeks, we discovered our baby had suspected renal pelvic dilatation and would need to have repeat scans at 28 weeks and 36 weeks. Our plans for VBAC remained unaffected, following the advice from our consultants that our baby was well. In preparation, I had also researched gentle C-sections and how many of the natural birth elements can be applied, where safe, to belly births, in case this situation arose again. I approached the birth with excitement, and when my due date came and went, I didn't feel frustrated and just enjoyed the last few days of being pregnant. You truly miss that bump. At my 40-week appointment, 2 days after my due date, my midwife measured my bump and I was measuring small for dates. Having had a larger baby before, I thought this was a bit odd. It was also the third time I had measured small, and so we went in for a heart trace and potential scan to make sure baby was well. I was advised to be induced going post-dates. However, I was given a few more days to see if things would happen on their own. I was already 1 centimetre dilated, as baby was moving okay. This decision to agree to induction came from an affirmation I had been taught. I make informed decisions that feel right for me and my baby. With her issues with her kidneys, I couldn't risk she might have been unwell. That date came and off we went to be induced. I was for trial of Cook's cervical ripening balloon catheter, but when they examined me, I was already 3 centimetres, so my waters were released instead. It was 4 p.m. The labour ward was packed, and so I stayed on the antenatal ward, but my surges were coming quick and fast. However, I zoned out, kept the lighting low, it helped that it was evening, and listened to my affirmations. I couldn't even hear the other women. At 10 p.m. I was moved to the labour ward and again created our birth space in the room. We had soft music. I took Wilfred's bobble hat as an anchor and felt totally relaxed, despite very intense surges. Another 4 hours and little progress. It was the first time I felt scared and frustrated, but I had learned not to let that emotion in and thought logically to get an epidural and at least rest until my next exam and conserve some energy. Despite this logical thinking, my epidural only worked on one side, so I was battling surges for a couple of hours before I moved on my side, by advice of my lovely midwife, and it took effect at last. Another exam, still 5 centimetres. Again, frustration crept in. Our obstetrician suggested we try a drip, and I initially agreed. Then I heard, "I'm preparing for the birth of a calm baby and a confident mother." And I decided my body had done enough and I didn't want an emergency situation. I was also informed that the risk of rupture could increase with the drip. I burst into tears and the release gave me the strength to know our baby needed to be born by belly, so she was calm and safe. At 7:46 a.m, Peggy arrived weighing 8 pounds. She was placed onto my chest and we had immediate skin to skin and she fed about 20 minutes after her birth. It wasn't uncomplicated and I suffered a postpartum hemorrhage on the operating table, but knew I was in the safest hands. In recovery, our OB who delivered her came to see us and reassured us about what had caused the blood loss. He said it could have been from scar tissue, from the previous section, or that I was on the border of rupturing. I was so proud I had listened to my body and my baby at the time I did, and not had the drip. I don't like the phrase unsuccessful, so I won't say my VBAC was that. Unsuccessful would be if I didn't feel in control, which I did. Despite a really heavy blood loss and abdominal delivery, Peggy breastfed well and actually lost no weight at her 5-day check, when babies can lose up to 10%. In fact, she gained 1 ounce. My breast milk is just right for my baby. I want every woman preparing for a VBAC or a repeat C-section to know there is no failure. Your body is amazing and birth can be beautiful, even when the unexpected arises. Part 3. Becoming Mum. Welcome to the world of new motherhood. This part of the book is all about the days after birth and what to do after waving goodbye to your midwife. We are going to run through what to expect, physically and mentally, how to look after your postpartum self, healing, breastfeeding, and the most important things your newborn needs. There is also a helpful list of resources at the end. You can always call specific numbers for more individualized questions or help if you need it. Your baby has now joined you inside your sacred circle, and caring for the both of you is going to be wonderfully exhausting. But the most important thing to remember now is that you are going to be an amazing mum. What I would have told my postpartum self. I was recently sent this message on social media and thought it was such good advice I had to share it with you. With permission, of course. After seeing so many amazing birthing stories, it has made me really think recently about what I would have told myself just after my baby was born and I was officially a mum. I would have told myself to cut myself some slack. It's okay to cry sometimes. Well, most of the time. I cried every time an advert with a baby came on TV for months. You're bloody emotional. Your body has just gone through the biggest job of its life. Be realistic. Leave your hair in a scruffy bun for as long as you need to and stay in your pajamas as long as physically possible. I am the worst for putting myself under pressure to get up and get dressed. Accepting you have just brought a little human being into the world is the best thing you can do. It doesn't matter what you look like. You are Wonder Woman. I would have told myself to stay at home longer and not try to do a big shop 3 days after having a cesarean section. Accept help from others. You can't do everything and you need rest, big time. I would have told myself to sleep when the baby sleeps. Sounds cliched, I know. But I never did this, and I wish I did. Everybody said this to me, but I never listened. I always thought there were things that needed doing when Jet was asleep, and then I was ratty by 2 p.m. This point could save your sanity. I lost mine trying to do it all. I would have told myself to do what is right for you and your baby, and not judge yourself based on somebody else's opinion or experience. I was desperate to have a home birth and was distraught when Jet arrived by C-section. I felt I had failed, even though this was out of my control. Things don't always go to plan, but if you and baby are well, you are doing amazing. Lastly, I would tell myself to just enjoy the journey because every day is so precious. The washing can wait, the cleaning can wait, or you can order a takeaway. Somebody told me this before I had Jet, and it is so true. Be patient, be emotional, but mostly, be present. The first 24 hours. The first 24 hours after birth are different for all women, but at some point during this time, you will say goodbye to the midwife who looked after you during labour and birth. If you're in a hospital or midwife-led unit, MLU, then it will be you that is going home. But if you had a home birth, it will be your midwife heading off home or back to the office. Being without a midwife may feel daunting, and it's the one thing that most new mums have in common. New mums often have a realisation that they don't know what comes next or what will happen from now on. So in this section, we will run through your options after birth and what to expect. The golden hour. Let's look at the first hour after birth. Midwives no longer rush in to weigh the baby immediately. They are generally very protective over the golden hour, which is the first hour of your baby's life. That hour should be as undisturbed as possible, as you both need time and space to appreciate what just happened. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than giving life. Ideally, you want to be in skin-to-skin contact with your baby for at least 1 hour after birth. Studies revealed that babies who were in skin-to-skin within 2 hours of birth had warmer feet 23 hours after birth. It was thought that this wasn't just because of the transfer of heat, but because being in skin-to-skin with their mum reduced some of the stress of birth. Stress tends to deviate blood from the extremities, like the feet, making them feel colder and cause more energy reserves to be used up. Which is possibly why babies who have skin-to-skin soon after birth are better able to maintain their blood sugar levels. Skin-to-skin is one of the best gifts you can give your baby, and it also has a huge impact on breastfeeding initiation. Midwives and birth experts have known for years that skin-to-skin and breastfeeding reduces the risk of bleeding after birth and increases natural oxytocin. But thanks to new research, we now have a fancy name for this physiological process: pronurturance. If you have your baby in hospital, you will stay in the birth room for at least an hour after birth, and usually for a couple of hours. NICE guidelines also support this golden hour, unless there is a medical reason to separate or disturb you and your baby. You may stay in skin-to-skin for longer, but when you are ready, your midwife will offer to give your baby vitamin K and to weigh your baby. Finding out the weight of your baby is a really exciting moment and answers the question everyone will ask. We make a note of the weight so we can check how baby is growing going forward. Then, it is up to you what happens next. Your baby can go back to you for more skin-to-skin, or you can have a shower or a bed bath if you've had a C-section, change of clothes, and something to eat if you haven't already. Most women are really hungry after birth. In the first few hours after birth, your midwife will make sure you are generally feeling okay and do your observations: blood pressure, pulse, temperature, oxygen saturations, and respiratory rate. Check your bleeding and perineum and give you pain relief if you need it. Weigh and check your baby over for anything physical like skin tags, etc. Help with feeding your baby. Check your position and attachment if needed. Answer any questions you may have and give reassurance. Get you some good old tea and toast. Your midwife will be there just for you and will be able to help you with anything you need in those first couple of hours after birth. She will stay with you longer if you need more support, though, and carry out any further investigations that are needed. The next few hours and going home. If you have had a home birth and do not need to go into hospital for any reason, your midwife will make sure you are happy with everything. Make sure you have all the contact details you need, good support from those around you, and will let you know when he or she or a colleague will next come to see you. Sometimes you will be offered a clinic appointment for your postnatal follow-up, and your midwife can organise this with you before they leave. If you have had your baby in a midwife-led unit, MLU, or hospital setting, they'll ask where you want to go, whether home or the postnatal ward. Generally, women that have had a vaginal birth with no complications can go home that same day, sometimes after a matter of hours. Other times, women will go to the postnatal ward if they need a little more clinical care, such as observations or monitoring, but also if they'd like extra support with feeding overnight. If you've had a C-section, then you will need to stay for at least one night. In some hospital units, partners can stay, and in others they can't, due to space or safety considerations. It is worth finding this out beforehand, so that it isn't a shock if your partner needs to go home. When it is time to go home from the maternity unit or hospital, massive moment, yippee! Your midwife will give you a pack and explain a few key things. This pack has a lot of useful and important information in it, and a lot of contact numbers. You probably won't take in all the information right away, but remember to take a look at it when you can, or get your birth partner to go through it all when you get home. The contact details will include how to get in touch with your community midwife during usual working hours, or out of hours, you can call the maternity triage line, usually the same number you call if you had questions in pregnancy. If you have any questions, worries, or concerns, don't be afraid to give them a shout. Things like feeding, sleeping, taking care of your postnatal healing and any wounds will probably come up that you aren't sure about, especially with your first. No question is a silly question. You may also be given a red book, which contains a record of your baby's growth, development, and immunizations from 0 to 4 years of age. The long-term plan is to go digital with this, so you may be given online access instead of a physical copy. The NIPE check. The newborn and infant physical examination, or NIPE as we shorten it to, is a check that is recommended for all newborn babies and should be done within 72 hours of birth. It's a full MOT for newborns, a more in-depth check than the initial one your midwife did at birth. We tend to start at the head and work our way all the way down to their tiny toes. Whilst working our way down, we check things like their eyes, the rate and specific sound of the heart, their reflexes, genitalia, and much more. Some midwives and most paediatricians do NIPEs, but if you are at home or no one is able to when you have your baby, you'll be offered a follow-up appointment so your baby can have this check done. Your top-to-toe checkup. Your midwife will usually come to see you at home or offer a clinic appointment within the first 24 to 48 hours after birth. This varies around the country, but either way, you should hopefully see a midwife you have seen at some point during your pregnancy. Just like you were offered during the antenatal period, you'll be offered the standard routine care, plus extra appointments or involvement with professionals, should you need it. These postnatal checks are to make sure that you and your baby are well, so please feel free to talk openly to your midwife about how you are feeling and what's going on. We will never judge you. We don't care if there's a pile of dirty dishes in the sink, and we don't expect to be waited on. We aren't guests. We are simply there to help and support you. Typically, at the top-to-toe assessment, we want to find out if your blood pressure and general observations are normal for you, how you are feeling in yourself. You may be quite tired and tearful at times. That is very normal, and we will talk about that more later on. How your breasts are feeling, and whether you are breastfeeding or not. We will check to make sure you are comfortable and there is no sign of infection in your breasts, mastitis. What is happening with your tummy? You may get period-like after pains. It's normal as your uterus contracts and shrinks back down to its normal size, most commonly when you breastfeed your baby. Your blood loss. Blood loss known as lochia will probably seem like a heavy period in the first 3 days, but it should settle and start to change colour to a brown, watery loss after 5 days, but sometimes this can take longer. We also ask about any clots or smelly loss. How any wounds are, for example, a C-section or perineal wound. If you are weeing and pooing okay. Going for a wee can feel weird in the first few days, and you may not feel when you need to go. How your legs and calves are. We will check for red, hot, painful, or swollen areas if you are breathless even when resting, as these could be signs of a blood clot. You may be given a blood thinner after birth if you have had a C-section, or if you are at an increased risk of blood clot, thrombosis. What to expect after the birth? Your body needs time to heal and recover after the birth, and there is a lot going on. Here are some of the things you might experience in the days and early weeks after birth. Many postnatal women are concerned about bleeding and going to the toilet after birth. No matter how you give birth, vaginally or via C-section, you will bleed after birth. So let's look at that first. Bleeding. Your body needs to lose the lining of the womb that your baby has nestled in for the past 9 months. You will need to change your pads regularly, especially in the first 2 or 3 days after birth. You may get strong after pains with the bleeding, especially while you are breastfeeding, and taking regular painkillers helps with this. Sometimes women lose clots after birth, and small or stringy clots are usually normal. If any clots are larger or look more like tissue, you need to call your midwife or triage line to let someone know. What we are thinking about here is that maybe the whole of the placenta didn't come away at birth, meaning that there is possibly a bit still in your uterus. It might be hard for you to tell what it is that you are losing, but don't worry, that's not your job. If you are unsure, call anyway. And as strange as this may sound, save the blood clot or sanitary towel for us to look at. We are happy to look at anything to check if it's normal. I much prefer when women save their worries for me because it is much easier to diagnose things or reassure them that it's normal. Weeing. Sometimes your bladder just needs a little bit of retraining to remember what it needs to do following a birth. If you have had a C-section or an epidural, you will have a catheter fitted, and your bladder wouldn't have been filling and emptying like it normally does. You may feel a bit weird or swollen around your urethra, wee hole. In the very early days, it can be normal not to feel when you need to go or leak a bit of urine en route to the loo. If you've had a vaginal birth, weeing can feel really weird and almost like your body doesn't belong to you. You may still not feel like you need to go to the loo, even when your bladder is full. To help remind your bladder, you may want to set an alarm every few hours to go for a wee. During the night, turn your alarm off and try to wee every time you feed your baby. Drinking plenty of water and staying well hydrated is vital for the postnatal period. It reduces the risk of blood clots, helps restore your body after losing blood, and prevents constipation. This will mean that you do need to wee, even if you don't feel like it. By setting an alarm, you are helping your bladder to get full and empty and repeat the process. This is simple and easy retraining. After the first few days, and with a bit of training, any leaking and weird sensations should start to go. But if it doesn't, you need to tell your midwife, as we can refer you and make sure you get extra support early on. If you get any pain, stinging, or burning passing urine, you need to let your midwife know as soon as possible, as it could be an infection. Things to look out for. When you are at home or without a midwife around, there are some important symptoms you need to look out for. The most concerning problems after birth are bleeding, infection, preeclampsia, or blood clots in the legs and/or lungs. If you get any of the following symptoms, you need to let your midwife know immediately. They are all treatable, but letting us know immediately means that the conditions won't progress and we can manage them better. Symptoms of sudden and profuse blood loss or persistent increased blood loss, faintness, dizziness, or palpitations or tachycardia, a faster heart rate than normal, could be a postpartum hemorrhage. Having a fever, shivering, abdominal pain, and/or offensive vaginal loss could be an infection. If you've got headaches accompanied by one or more of nausea, vomiting, and/or visual disturbances, flashing lights, within the first 72 hours after birth, you could have preeclampsia or eclampsia. And if you've got calf pain, redness, or swelling, shortness of breath or chest pain. You could have a thromboembolism, blood clot. Key points. The first hour after birth should be as undisturbed and restful as possible. You'll be able to go home after a few hours if everything is well. There are specific symptoms to look out for after pregnancy. Early recognition means easier treatment. You'll be given a lot of support and help, and this continues after the birth.